Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
We got a one here next coming up where you complete the pass. So
finally,
right? Like, you're like literally like, what an asshole Chris Sims is. He brings me on and shows me plays, and two of them are incompletions. Yo, what's up? It's Chris Sims. I'm Button, and I got one of my guys here. That's right. It's quarterback time. Quarterback school. Bo Nix, quarterback of the Oregon Quack Attack Ducks, joining me today. I appreciate that, man. How you doing, Bo?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me today.
Of course, man. I've got so much respect for your game, your journey, all of that. So I want to make sure we hit on all of that. But as I was sitting there talking about you, Oregon Ducks, right, and all that, here's the first thing, just random, right? What's your favorite uniform you wore all those years in Oregon? Because you guys change them every damn week.
Yeah, my favorite was the we wore them a couple of times. We wore it last year against Arizona and then this year against Washington. They were the eggshell ones is what we call them. And they're the white ones with the green dots on them.
For some reason,
you know, I like the aesthetic on TV, and they look pretty good.
Yeah, they do look really good. How did you guys like, who decides uniforms on a weekly basis there in Oregon? Is it something like the players get a hand in, or does like just the coach and Nike basically go, this is what we're wearing this week, so deal with it?
So it's a few different things, actually. Sometimes Nike will tell us what we're wearing. If it's a special game or if it's a special uniform, they'll tell us when they want us to wear it. But, you know, this year I was able to be on the player committee that got to, you know, put, you know, our thoughts together and kind of, you know, elaborate on the uniforms and what, you know, combination we want to wear for which game. And then last year, you know, there was another player committee and so forth. So our equipment guy, Kenny Farr, does a great job of putting that together, and he always takes care of us.
Oh, that's cool. I feel like it's safe to say, like, you know, you're going to get to the NFL, you're going to be a starting quarterback at some point, and you're going to be wearing Nike cleats. Like, there's no way Nike lets you go to the NFL and doesn't have you as one of their guys, right?
So being at Oregon, that was one of the best things about it is the Nike stuff and the Nike experience. And, you know, I've been able to form great relationships with, you know, the people at Nike and those who work really hard for it. And obviously Phil Knight's at, you know, every single one of our games, and he's a great, you know, the biggest supporter we have. And so that's been, you know, a hidden gem and an awesome little, you know, gift that's come along with just being at Oregon is that Nike, you know, partnership.
Yeah, I hear that. Whoever the partnership was, that was big in my, when I was coming out, you know, I was like the number one player in high school football. I was always like, oh man, I'm going to a Nike school. I'm wearing Nike cleats. Yeah, you went to the ultimate Nike school. All right. So I want to dive back into, like, you know, your early life, if you don't mind a little bit. Really, because, like, again, when I talk about quarterbacks, I like to see what makes them, you know, how did you grow up, the sports you were involved, some of the influences in your life, all of that, right? So, like, first thing is, like, when you were young, youth sports, what sports were you playing as a young athlete?
I loved baseball and basketball when I was little. My dad didn't let me play tackle football until seventh grade when I could play for my school. And so before that, I would play either flag football or, you know, just hang out during the fall and wait for, you know, basketball or baseball. Some years I played fall baseball, but whatever it was, I was always competing at the sport, you know, that was in season. So in basketball and in baseball season, you know, I thought I was going to be the next, you know, basketball or baseball player. That's
right.
What I was, you know, putting all my time into. And then eventually I was able to get out on the football field. And then, you know, soon after that, I realized that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
All right. So baseball, what positions were you playing here?
So I pitched growing up and played shortstop and played center field. So kind of stayed down the middle of the defense. And, you know, obviously hitting is the toughest part of baseball. So if you can hit, you can make it far. So apparently I couldn't hit.
Hitting was the problem. Okay. All right. So the fielding stuff was good. Basketball, you point guard, shooting guard, which one are you there?
Yeah, I was a, you know, point guard by trade and naturally, but sometimes, you know, in middle school, high school, I, you know, was a football player and grew. So I was, you know, oftentimes asked to guard the four or the five on the other opposing team. So it depended if we were on offense or defense or what position I was playing, but I like to bring the ball up the court and, you know, set the offense and, you know, be a quarterback on the basketball court.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens to guys like that. Similar there too, right? You know, yeah, we still have some size. So they're like, yeah, you can play shooting guard or point guard on offense, but on defense, there's a four over there. You got to go be a little strong and physical with and get down in the box and play that type of game. All right. So basketball, baseball, certainly awesome. I'm shocked to hear that with your dad. I mean, Patrick Nix, quarterback of the big, bad SEC Auburn Tigers. He didn't let you play football. I am surprised. What went into that? Why was your dad? What was the messaging he was kind of giving you growing up there?
Well, simply put, he didn't necessarily want me to go out there and at a young age and just play ball in the ring or do a bunch of Oklahoma drills that technically doesn't do much for the game of football. And the coaches aren't necessarily, they don't necessarily
watch over you that way, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're not necessarily high school or college coaches that are teaching technique and,
right.
You know, that sort of thing, the fundamentals of the game. So he wouldn't let me play until I was, you know, playing for my school, you know, with the high school or the JV coaches. And he also didn't want to let me, you know, get burnt out. You know, a lot of guys that play at a young age, they're calling it quits when they get to high school
exactly.
or college and they're just kind of done with it. But fortunately for me, I have not played. You know, a whole lot of football. I'm still, you know, catching up with guys who've been playing, you know, since they were little kids.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that your dad had that type of vision, right? I mean, we've all seen that guy, psycho dad, who, yeah, now the kid is like so sick of the dad being on their butts all the time that they don't want to play sports anymore. A sophomore year in high school, they give it up. So like, shout out to Patrick Nix there for being a normal father. And my dad was a lot that way too. You know, I played earlier than you, but he was not overbearing. And I think that burnout point you make is real. All right. So you're going through that process. You're growing up, right? But you still love quarterback. Were you like still the kid in the backyard throwing footballs with dad, doing all that type of stuff, working on quarterback stuff? Or did you wait till you actually played like a little bit of a more organized real football, like you were saying in seventh grade, and then you started to dive in?
Well, I always wanted to be a quarterback, and I begged him every year to go out there and play. But he, you know, he stood his ground. He wouldn't let me, you know, change his mind. But we played a lot in the backyard. I had a little brother, and so we played often, and we threw and caught the football. And you know, we were always playing around the neighborhood, playing at recess, playing at school, whatever it was. I played football as much as possible. Got to play some flag football, which I think you know was good for my development,
sure.
Throwing and catching and hitting moving targets, but. You know, I think ultimately when I finally got to seventh grade, that's when I, you know, you don't really learn how to play tackle football until you go out there and play tackle football. So, you know, I played offense and defense, played a few different positions, you know, so it was fun and, you know, really got to be a kid and play some football like it was, like Little League or something.
So you're playing football, right? I mean, like dad, right, you know, you getting into mechanics though once you start to get a quarterback right away, or did he just let you play for a few years and then you get into high school and you start doing that and working on it that way, right? How did that process kind of work out as you started to become more evolved as a quarterback?
We worked on mechanics growing up, and you know, I would do some three-step drops and some you know, some footwork, and you know, he would teach me how to throw the football, but it wasn't like, you know, every throw he was trying to critique me or correct me. He kind of let me go out there and play. But I do think, you know, the repetitions that we got, you know, I probably bothered him a lot about, you know, the game and playing. And, you know, so I was, you know, I think developed by the time I got into seventh and eighth grade, I was a little bit, you know, further along than others throwing the ball because he, you know, had been in my life teaching me for so long. And so that's just all I knew. So when I started throwing, I was, you know, hopefully doing it the right way. and you know, learn some of those habits early on, so I didn't develop bad habits that he had to overcoach at the end.
Did you realize like your arm was special before that? Did you already know, like when you were in fifth grade playing flag football, or did you know, wait, my arm's pretty damn good? Or was that was there a moment in seventh, eighth, ninth grade where you're like, wait, my arm's a little different than the rest of the guys we're playing against or at my school here?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think, you know, growing up, I was able to throw and do the little things that was a little bit, you know, it separated me a little bit from the other kids. But at the same time, that was like, you know, we were all growing and developing. So really, I knew I was going to be able to, you know, throw and be athletic and all that, but I didn't know how, you know, big or how athletic I would end up being. So sometimes to make it to college football, you got to meet the size requirements,
yeah,
or you got to be, you know, certain athleticism, and, you know, your arm kind of evolves as you go. So, you know, middle school, high school, it was about ninth, 10th grade to where I started developing a little bit, and was like, you know what, I think I'll be, you know, big and strong enough with a good enough arm to go and play college. And then from there, once you make it to college, you start, you know, putting your sights on the NFL. I never actually, growing up, I was always just, you know, my goal was to be a college quarterback.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to do. I watched so much of it. And then, you know, as I evolved and as I grew up and then, you know, became more aware, it was like, okay, then I want to be an NFL quarterback after college. So, but that's the unique part of the journey, is that we all have different goals and dreams.
Definitely.
And we all have different, you know, mindsets and ideas that we want. But that's what I was able to do. And I knew, you know, about middle or about ninth, 10th grade that I could potentially play, you know, at the next level.
Yeah. Well, listen, I mean, you know, obviously, and like, well, I forgot my point I was going to make there. Well, either way, I'll go on my next one and it'll come back to me. Sorry, I'm blonde. I'm from New Jersey a little bit. All right. So wait,
yeah,
you hit on that there. When did you kind of, okay, so, you know, I feel like, hey, I'm a freshman, I'm a sophomore, I'm physically starting to, like, get it here, my body's coming along, okay? And then when did it start to go, okay, schools are starting to recruit for me? Oh, I understand what you're saying with your dad. I played with a lot of guys at Texas. Ultimate goal was Texas. They didn't even think about the NFL until all of a sudden their senior year in high school, right? And then they start to go, whoa, whoa, damn, wait, there's more football to be had after college. And your dad growing up in that and being a high school coach, I totally can understand that mindset. But to piggyback off of what I was saying a second ago, so okay, starting to make a name for yourself in high school, you're playing basketball still, doing all that stuff as well throughout high school. When did you start to get recruited? When did you start to hear from teams and everything?
So I played basketball and baseball up until I went to college.
Awesome.
You know, I graduated early, so couldn't play basketball the last year. Yeah, I played, different years. I played basketball and baseball. And that was fun because that's the last times, you know, you get to play the sports, and that's what you grew up doing. So that's, you know, the memories that you have. And I started to get recruited a little bit more after my freshman year going into my sophomore year. And then, you know, it grew after that. I transferred schools after my 10th grade year. And in my junior and senior year were, I think really good for my development, and I, you know, had two good seasons.
And did you have dad coaching you at that point, your junior and senior year?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like dive into that a little bit. Yeah. How did that go?
my dad coached me from my eighth grade year on. My seventh grade year, I played middle school, you know, started on seventh grade. And then when it was a, you know, a mixed seventh and eighth grade game, I would play up with the eighth grade, but you know, that was middle school. And then eighth grade, I started to play more JV. And then, you know, I was the backup on varsity. And about halfway through the varsity season, our quarterback got hurt. And so I was kind of the only person left, the only guy that could go out there and, you know, orchestrate a play and do something with the football. So my dad let me go out there and play varsity as an eighth grader. So he
Wow.
was my coach from eighth grade to 12th grade. So I got 5 years, you know, with my dad, and it was not always easy. It wasn't always
I'm sure.
You know, fun. I definitely had some good days and some bad days, but I wouldn't be where I am today without having those years, because I feel like I'm mentally tough because, you know, of the, you know, the expectations and, you know, what he expected from me. But at the same time, he pushed me to a level I don't think I would have reached with another coach. So I think it was a good happy medium there. And I think, you know, it was the best for me.
Do you I want to ask you about, some of your best arguments with your dad when it went down on the field, practice field. I mean, we know father-son relationship. I mean, damn, my dad won two Super Bowls. Sometimes we'd be out there throwing, and I'd be like, I don't want to hear you. You know what you're talking about, Dad. Whatever, right? We all know how that works out. But you got any, like, stories like that between you and your dad getting after it during a game or yelling or anything like that?
Oh, I got several. We never – I was better during games. I was more respectful during games and didn't necessarily, change play or go out there and, be crazy. But, several times in practice, he'd make me mad and I would say something I probably shouldn't have, or, I wasn't always the most coachable, from him. I was a coachable kid, but not necessarily from him, because I just wanted, to do everything right for him. But, actually going into my senior year, the spring was so tough that my mom thought about, putting me in another school and having my dad coach and I just go play for somebody else. And I was like, no, you're crazy. That's never going to happen. I'm playing for my dad. And then things got better. And so it was always, those funny stories. He'd come home mad at me and I'd be mad at him. And, eventually we'd both get over it and go to the next day or whatever, but it never was personal and it never boiled over to something worse. Thank goodness we had, a good personal relationship, and we kind of kept it, from on the field to off the field. But I think, eventually my dad, it was about college. I came home one summer. I was like, Dad, you got to start training me again. I'm kind of, not getting enough development, while in the off season, because college coaches can't coach you, so
right,
you're just out
right.
there throwing. So I need some guidance. And we went out there one time, and he started coaching me. I was like, Dad, what are you talking about? That's not where, that's not what we're doing now. And he finally was like, Look, I'm done. I'm gonna find you somebody that can train you. And we're gonna go somewhere else. He said, I've maximized my coaching for you, and I'm gonna let somebody else do it. And sure enough, he hadn't coached me really since then. And so I've been training with David Morrison at QB Country, and I've seen a lot of growth from just the fundamentals and mechanics. And every once in a while, my dad will sneak something in and say, hey, tell him to do this or something. And that's what I hear. But that's all I really, the coaching I get from dad anymore.
All right, that's cool. That's the way it's supposed to be. You're a grown man now. He's not supposed to be coaching you too much. Just little tidbits here and there. I love it. I love it that, hey, it all comes to that point where the dad finally just goes, all right, the hell with it. I'm done. I can't talk anymore. I see, this is why I like to do these interviews, because I learn things about guys. And the first thing I'm learning here is that, one, you must have been pretty mentally mature to be able to be the varsity quarterback as an eighth grader, right? And totally into the game to be able to be that. I started on varsity as a freshman, right? Eighth grade is a whole nother level. So I can speak to that a little bit. And then you got to feel like, having your dad there, him watching over you, coaching you tough, not teaching, treating you with like preferential treatment, you got to feel like that made you mentally tougher and made you more prepared for where you are right now. Am I correct by stating that?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely give my mental toughness credit to him. And it was because of the many days of practice. He was, very tough, and this is how you do it, and you did it wrong, and you got to do it again, and this and that. There was a point I was like, man, I'm never going to get this. This is impossible. I'm never going to be, good enough. But eventually, every year you grow and you get better, and then I'm starting to play good, and he's, giving me compliments, and there was nothing better than that. But yeah, I remember several times, in eighth grade, I was out there, doing my best. I'd only played the game for technically 2 years. And, we had, seniors out there that would go up to him and say, hey, coach, you need to relax on Bo a little bit. You're being too tough on him. And so some of those older guys saved me. But yeah, it was fun. And I was definitely, mentally tough, definitely challenged, and had to ultimately grow up pretty fast and be mature. I didn't really have a choice.
Yeah, you don't, and especially when it's coming home with you at night on some nights too. Then you're like, damn, I still got to think about this jerk yelling at me in practice and all that, and how to compartmentalize all of it.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the tree of life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, so we go there. Now we got, wait, you know, hey, it's Bo Nix. He's been recruited. He's going to college, whatever. Of course he's going to Auburn. His dad was Patrick Nix, the quarterback of the 13-0 Auburn Tigers team. That works out, right? I mean, was there a close call there between anybody else at the end, or did you kind of feel like it was inevitable as far as going to Auburn?
Well, it was a, you know, kind of a strange thing because I visited several places and I was like, man, I could see myself going here. Like, this would be a great situation. And but there was something about, you know, Auburn. I felt like I owed it to myself, you know, having that dream and having that, you know, that goal of playing at Auburn and going and beating Alabama and trying to win a championship. I felt like I owed it to myself. And while I had the opportunity, I didn't really want to pass it up, and I didn't want to, you know, go away from it. Now, there were several, you know, coaches and teams that were very, very close. You know, they recruited me very hard, and they were, you know, special coaches and very, you know, great relationship builders and great, you know, teachers of the game. And, right. And I saw all their product on the field. You know, as a high school kid, I saw what they were doing with their college guys. And, you know, so it was a tough decision, but I felt like ultimately, you know, Auburn was really where I wanted to go. And, you know, you only play 12 games a year. So outside of those 12 games, you know, where do I want to go to college and where do I want to, you know, advance my career? And it was, you know, an easy decision, and it was Auburn.
Yeah. I mean, it obvious, and I get it all there. Right. I can remember watching you at Auburn with my dad, and we're going, man, this Bo Nix got a little something. And, you know, it doesn't look pretty. Your team wasn't always that great. Your offense wasn't that great. I'll say those things for you. Don't worry about it. Right. So, but now you get to a point where, like, where did it come to a head? Because this has got to be tough. Like, I changed my commitment at a high school. I said I was going to go to Tennessee, and then I changed to Texas a few weeks later. This is a different ball game. This is, wait, you're the quarterback at Auburn. Wait, your dad's a legend at Auburn. You've been here, right? How did it kind of all come to this pinnacle of, wait, I think Auburn's not the best place for me. I need to go somewhere else and try to figure that out.
Well, it was, you know, I think, like you just mentioned, you know, a lot of people watching, they kind of forget some of the good things that happened, and they forget some,
yes,
of the, you know, the special
the circumstances
moments
around
the big
it,
wins.
Right.
And we kind of made the negative a little bit bigger than what it was. But regardless, it was just to a point my junior year, to where I kind of felt stuck, and I kind of felt like I wasn't, you know, growing any or getting better or reaching my full development. And, you know, I felt like I could, you know, get a fresh start somewhere else. And fortunately for me, that opportunity was at Oregon, and it was such a great opportunity to where it kind of lifted me back up and got me going again. And, you know, I think just it was a different, you know, different perspective, and I was able to go and not feel, you know, the self-endured pressure that I put on myself,
right,
from Auburn. And, you know, that's what I wanted to do my whole life. So I put a lot of pressure into it. You know, I had one shot to do,
yeah,
it, one chance. But,
right,
and then I was just eventually like, it's just not going to work here. And, you know, maybe that's not, you know, what I'm supposed to do. Maybe it's not at Auburn where I can do these things. And so at Oregon, all of my dreams came back alive, and I was able to pursue those and, you know, compete for a championship. You know, I was up for the Heisman and all these cool accolades that come with playing the game. And That's what everybody who plays, that's what they dream of. So, you know, it was just fortunate. I was fortunate to find a place, you know, like Oregon to help me do that.
I, you know, it's a gutsy move. It really is. I give you credit for that. Not easy to do, especially when there's, you know, family heritage stuff involved there. So, you know, gutsy move there by you, necessary move. Okay, so you get to Oregon. You talk about the growth of the player, right? And you just, you wanted more. You felt like you weren't quite getting to where you wanted to go quick enough, right? What areas were they, you know, that you're talking about, right? And within that, the areas you're talking about, and, yeah, what was that biggest area of growth as compared to Auburn Bo Nix to Oregon Bo Nix?
Well, you know, ultimately it came down to the flexibility and the, you know, the overall freedom that I had within the offense. And Coach Dillingham gave me the tools to go out there and just be Bo. And my first year at Oregon, I felt like I was able to go out there and you know, play at a high level and do a lot of different things and showcase, you know, what I was capable of doing. And, you know, ultimately that led to this past year and, you know, building off of that and going out there each week and trying to find the most efficient way possible to play the game and play the position. And I got better and better as it went, but it was also, you know, two great years.
Yeah, it was great years. I mean, you played awesome football, Bo. I don't underestimate yourself there. It was amazing. It really was. Enjoyed watching. And you talked about the flexibility of the offense. Like, that's what I kind of wanted to talk to you about a little bit. And I got some plays here. Got a play that from Texas Tech, right? And again, it's not a changing of the play here, but, you know, before we start it and play it, right, I'd like you to explain it to us a little bit. And even before that, explain to us how much flexibility you have. I mean, on this play here, you obviously are going to change some protection, and we'll get into that in a second. But did you have free rein to check to anything at any time? How much freedom did you exactly have?
Yeah, I did, and we went over all the tools throughout the week, and we went over the scheme and the different things that we wanted to get to. So here's just really simple. I believe it's going to be, you know, empty, one of our bread and butters. We're going to have verticals with an option route, you know, underneath. Then we see, you know, obviously pressure coming from the left.
Yep,
you
weak
know,
side linebacker.
Rolled down. And
right.
So this is an easy copy call. And so sometimes you don't always see it, but if you see it, you want to get, you know, maxed up. And so here we have Troy on a safety, and we felt like that was a, you know, unreal matchup when we get those. And here we don't connect, but it wasn't often that we miss,
no,
you know,
didn't.
Connections like no. This. So sometimes you don't hit them all, but, you know, this was a great opportunity for us to have a big play, and we have man free and we got him. And you know, that sun in Texas is a little different.
It is on there.
So that was tough. So that's one you get used to. And, but it, like I said, it doesn't happen a lot. You know, Troy and I don't miss a whole
no,
lot.
No, you so don't miss at all.
That was one of the fun parts about playing with those guys is we were on. I mean, he knew the ball was coming to him, I'm sure, when he saw safety roll down and they were in man. And so this was just an easy copy call, and we just changed the protection and, you know, get the known blitzers. And then now we got a clean pocket to throw a good one-on-one route to.
Yeah. And, you know, again, it's I feel bad for Troy there, and I didn't mean to show an incompletion, but the throw was awesome, and I wanted to show a play of you being able to point things out.
Yeah, no doubt.
So that's I mean, and I will verify you hit him a million times on those and other receivers on that type of route right there. So don't worry about that. But so protection, all that stuff, you had free rein to change that. I guess originally you probably had the guy on the right, number 13, as the Mike linebacker, right? You saw number 8, the single safety. You want to slide him over there. You get to do that. That's incredible. It's awesome they kind of gave you that trust and let you in the trust tree that way.
Oh, yeah. We had, you know, a lot of protection meetings, and we understood it inside and out. And originally, you know, my thought is to send the slide to the right, and that's where, you know, my eyes are going to the left first with the beginning of the read. And so if I'm hot, if he comes from depth, you know, I can react and adjust. But if he's going to make it, you know, obvious like this, then we'll copy it. Now we got a, you know, a clean pocket again, and we're just working off that low hole defender in the mic now.
Do you got like a package of plays when he tells you to audible, or you have free reign to audible anything? Or is it kind of like during the week schematic meeting, like, hey, when we're an empty in this formation, you know, they do this and this. When we do that, we like these 4 or 5 audibles? Or was it more like you can literally get to anything you want?
So it's a mixture of that. It's, you know, here, obviously, you're not going to condense and come back and run a run play. So
right.
With the structure that we've already got in place, you know, maybe it's moving one guy or maybe it's moving two guys, but you're not going to necessarily change the entire structure of the formation and then the play. So in that case, we were in empty. So the quickest way is just to copy it and go the other way, and then you're good again. And worst case scenario, you bring a running back in, and then you go six man protection, and you know his guy is wasted, and you still you know work the concept. We've done that several times with that play too. So there was many conversations, and we discussed a lot of like, if we get this, we want to get to this. If we get this, you can change this.
That's
and,
right.
So it was habit over time to where I knew my checks
knew
and I knew
what, yes.
you know, the operation.
Right. You were a programmed robot, which is what a good OC does at that point. All right. So here's another
Absolutely.
Play I want to dive into, because I got so sick of hearing during the year, "Little Bo Nix can't throw the ball deep." Like, you know, I'll just say it. Shut the hell up, everybody. Like, what are you talking about? Every deep ball he needs to throw, he throws it. Right. And this is what I like about you a lot, too. Now, you're not the offensive coordinator. You guys got a good team. Your screen game works really well. And you're an awesome screen game thrower. I just want to state that, too. Your ability to get the ball out of your hand quickly and accurately Thanks. Is extremely impressive. And it's a real skill in the NFL game that's needed that way. But I watch plays. I'm big into take advantage of what's there to be had as a quarterback, right? And I am. And again, I watch so many plays where a play like this where I go, "Oh, yeah, we got the 10-yard completion over the middle." And I'm sitting there going, "Yeah, that's cool, but the guy down the middle was open for a 50-yard touchdown pass," right? Here's one where it's you got open guys. You're going to throw the post, and you're a way better deep ball thrower and power thrower than people give you credit for. How did you see this one? How did you feel it? Because at first look, you don't think you're going to have the post down the middle, and then you kind of sit there and wait on it, and you throw a strike.
Well, this one is very close, again, to being a touchdown, and Tez knew it. So we want this play against single high, and when they're going to match up the backside dig, we know that the first post will cross the safety's face, and you're really throwing it to the pylon. This is actually probably, you know, I threw it further than I should have on this one. I should have just led him to the pylon, and he'd have been fine. But, you know, sometimes, again, like you go back and you take enough of these shots, you're going to hit them, but sometimes you miss them. And this was one that we had. And
Hey, you did awesome. You hit it. You hit it. They didn't catch it. Don't worry. I'll say it.
No, see, I brought him up the field.
You brought him up the field a little too much, right?
Instead of bringing him, you know, on his angle. But, I mean, it's you know.
My point is, how did you see it? That's where I wanted to see it. Because, like, the look itself, and we can re-rack it from the start, guys. The look itself, I would go, "Oh, well, just throw the in-cut at the top of the screen. The end cut there, you're going to have it. The safety's kind of deep. I don't know if you're going to have the deep post." I'm impressed with you having a feel is what I'm trying to get at, to go, "Wait, I know this doesn't look open right away, but I know it's about to come open." What was your context clue to kind of know that it was going to pop or you would have a chance to have this?
Well, we like this play against single high, and we want to read this boundary safety. And when he, you know, is essentially at linebacker depth, if that corner takes the end cut, we're one-on-one with the post safety who's thinking he's got the middle half. So he's not going to necessarily run with the other post. So I just have to wait until Tez crosses face
gotcha.
Of that free safety. And with his hips open to the field right here, you know he's going to cross eventually. So now I just want to see Tez's angle and give him a good, easy, catchable ball that he can run under.
And I'm not going to lie, right? Okay, full transparency, I didn't even realize this ball fell incomplete, okay? The other one I did, this one I didn't. I was like, "Oh, wait, this is an interesting one. Let me look at this." I was looking at your deep shots there, and I didn't even realize you didn't make the catch, and you missed them by a half an inch. So I'm sorry about that, okay? I didn't mean to do that at all. But this is like where – I mean, again, are you getting questions about this from evaluators at all as far as your arm strength, anything like that? Like, I can't imagine anybody's got a real issue with anything like that when they watch your game, because you make all the throws that are necessary.
No, that's not really something that we discuss.
Yeah. I mean, when you're with evaluators right now, right? I know you're going to make a few visits here and all that. What do you feel like people want to get to know you about or question you about in your game, as it sits right now?
Well, I think they've actually, I think, what it comes down to is they've heard a lot of different things. About Bo, there's a lot of things out there. There's this and that and this and that, and some contradict each other. And so literally, I think they just want to see it for themselves and get in front, of me and in a meeting room, and they want to, talk football, and then they want to go out there and see me throw it, and they want to see my pro day. And so I don't know if it's necessarily, I don't know what they question, but I do know that they just want to see it maybe for themselves and see it in real life.
Yeah, they're trying to figure it out and piece it all together. All right, we got a one here next coming up where you complete the pass, okay, and you throw a strike, and I want to get into that because
Finally.
finally, right? Like you're like literally like what an asshole Chris Sims is. He brings me out and shows me plays, and two of them are incompletions. One wasn't your
No.
fault. One maybe was just a little your fault. I still think it was a damn impressive throw. I love this
Think
throw.
it was
Here,
my
one of
fault.
the things I love about your game is you don't need room to throw the football. You don't need to step in or hitch step aggressively and need all this space. Like this throw here, you kind of get to the back of your drop, you hitch in place, and you throw a strike, a power throw right down the middle of the field, right? Take us through that a little bit. It's one of those things, Bo, that I look at that I love about you. And then sometimes I go, I wish Bo would just step into this throw a little bit more and he'd throw it 4 miles per hour harder, right? How do you balance this aspect of your game here?
Well, it's definitely tough because sometimes though you can do it, it's not always the best to do it. And we have this play against single high cover three, and we've got double posts, and so we expect the tight end here to go and collect that first safety, and then that next lane is for the outside receiver there for Tez. But Ferg sees the opening, and so he stays vertical. And as I'm going to throw it to Tez, he's in the window that is already open. So I kind of adjust in mid throw just to throw it to him. Because I set to come out here
Your
naturally.
eyes are to the left there. Like
Cause,
it's gonna go left. This is what I was gonna
cool.
ask you about. Yeah, go ahead. Go
Yeah,
ahead.
well, my the read's taking you to the outside lane,
Right,
but
right.
the tight end in this case ends up in that lane, so he's just the next open guy. So I kind of just
You played
threw it over there
football.
and threw it to the spot and let him catch it. But yeah, this was one of our best red zone concepts. We got the double post going. And here Ferg catches it, and we come back and we hit the post, and we hit different things on this play. It was one of our better red zone answers.
Well, that's what I was intrigued by this play when I watched it, when we picked it out here to show you today, because I was like, wait, was he just setting up to the left to like move a guy a little bit, knowing he was going to go down the middle? Or were you setting up to the left, like thinking, oh no, this is probably where this should go against this coverage, and you're telling me that's what you did, and then you just played football, you and your tight end, and realized, hey,
Yeah.
instinctually that I got to get the ball there.
Right. Yeah.
So,
So it turns into more of a four verts, but we
right.
had the post, so you hit the same, literally the same point. I ca probably could have made the same throw, and Tez would have run through and caught it, but he sees Ferg there. So this is one of those out. I see cover three, so you come back to hitch to the outside post, and then
Yeah.
if the flat defender gets in front of that, then you throw the check down. But here you set, and then Ferg's there and open and available. So it kind of just, I mean, it was definitely a quick, decision, and you don't always want to set one way and throw to somebody else. But
You got,
fortunately for me on this one, it worked
yeah,
out.
yeah. Well, that's life in the NFL. You're gonna have to make a few throws like that every now and then. I mean, that's something that I think that really evaluators will look at and go, yeah, we know that's not perfect, but it's a necessity in the league. At times for your feet not to be perfect, all of that, right? I've talked about your arm. I think it's plenty powerful and strong and all of that. Way better than it's getting credit for. I know that, right? I do want you to kind of hit me up a little bit with mechanics, right? Who do you work with? I know you brought up the name. How much are you working with him, right? And yeah, like how big of a part of his life is your quarterback coach?
Yeah, so Demo, David Morris, he's been working with me for, you know, I guess 3 years now. So, you know, we've been working on a lot of different things, you know, some ground force and some rotational force and all those things that go into the release of the throw and, you know, not being so much over the top. I think sometimes you hear, you know, coaches, they'll say, get your elbow up or get more over the top. And technically, that's not what you want to do. You want to be a little bit more rotational and you want to, you know, keep your left arm inside, keep that shoulder closed and kind of change the trajectory of that arm angle. So I've been working on some arm angles. And even though I, you know, you can say, oh, he throws with many different arm angles, it's like you want to find that slot that works and is consistent pretty much every time. And that's all throwing is finding the consistent release point over and over and over so you can be most accurate and you can throw it with the most velocity. So that's what we've been working on. And this draft process is the first time I've really been able to put more than 2 or 3 days at a time, you know, at it. You don't always get time to go and work with a trainer for a long period of time and just focus on one thing, and that's yourself, and get yourself, you know, locked in. But here with the draft process, while I'm not on a team, that's what you're doing is you're getting, you know, I'm getting myself as good as possible. And I'm, you know, I've made a lot of strides just from the season, you know, in throwing and finding a lot of consistencies. And, you know, like when my hip does this, this is what I feel and this is how it comes out and it's a lot better. So doing that over and over and finding it, because I've created a habit for so long of, you know, how I learned to throw it and what I was, you know, taught to throw. And that's what I've been doing. And so now with some tweaks and a few little adjustments, I got to retrain my body and reprogram my mind to do that over and over so that when I get in a game and I'm thinking about, you know, single high safety and who he took away and what drop and this and that, my form is consistent and my form is natural and it's just a habit.
Yeah, you got to be a machine that way. You can't be thinking about, oh, I got to keep my front shoulder in, I got to do this or whatever, right? There's no time to think about that. What's the biggest adjustment you think you've made post, you know, the season being over with your quarterback coach about your mechanics where you go, ooh, that's made a difference in my life and how I throw the football?
I think just from arm slot of taking it down to a little bit more 3/4.
Yeah.
And then it's not sidearm, but it's not over the top and I'm not going over my front leg. And then that keeps me from locking out my front leg, keeps me more with front knee bend and some just body posture and more leverage. And, you know, I play a little bit more snappy. I play a little quicker. And then it also helps keep my front shoulder closed because I'm kind of lean more to the right as I'm throwing, and instead of falling off to the left and ripping that arm and doing a lot of just over the top things, I'm kind of going a little bit more rotational and can keep the front elbow in and can just kind of throw from that 3/4 arm slot.
I know you're new to Chris Sims Unbuttoned, but this is something that we've emphasized for 5-6 years ever since I've been doing my podcast or hosting Pro Football Talk, right? I mean, you watch Rodgers, you watch Josh Allen, Mahomes, they throw, and it's more about going across, rotating, not like the old Johnny Unitas, oh, my elbow is way above my head and the hard release, right? That's just, it's not conducive to this day and age in the NFL. You know, with that too, just before, because I got two more plays I want to show you or talk about with you, but how about the football of the NFL, right? Have you enjoyed that as far as the quality of the football? I know it's a little bigger than what you threw in college. It doesn't have the stripe. The leather's a little bit better, right? Have you found that adjustment to be comfortable so far?
I love it. I think I'm excited about playing with the same football. So, you know, I play with many different coaches in college and also play with many different footballs. So each year I felt like I was playing with a different football, and now I can play with the same football for the rest of my life and don't have to change and can get used to it. So I'm excited about it. I love the Duke. It's a great ball. It's bigger, but I think it goes further, and I think it kind of takes itself and it spins itself. And
it
you
does.
Hear that a lot, but it really is true. And so a lot of throws kind of, they may come out not as clean, but they just find their way to spin. And
they still look clean.
I like it. Yeah. And obviously still getting used to it. I've only been throwing it for 3 months now. But, you know, by the time, you know, you get to your second, third, fourth, fifth season, you're throwing the same football and And I think you got to think that it makes a difference once you throw enough times.
Definitely will. Did you have to adjust your grip at all compared to the college ball to the NFL ball? Or did you still be able to keep your fingers in the same slots and the laces?
So I've messed around with a few different grips at times, especially in college with different footballs. But, you know, I got a few that I like to go to. And sometimes, you know, when you're throwing it quick, you don't always get the laces or you don't always get, you know, the grip you want. So I like to adapt and change the grip. And sometimes I'll mess around with it. But my original, my grip that I like to use, I've just been able to keep it and just go from there.
All right. That's good. That's good. I know you'll probably tweak with it too. I tweaked my grip a little in the NFL a few years. My dad did too. My dad was in year 5 of his NFL career. He changed his grip. He had one of the best years of his career. So, you know, I think that's an ongoing kind of feel type of thing as you get older and all that. All right.
It's a feel.
Yeah. It's the feel, right? That's what it's all about.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, so I want to get to two other aspects of your game here because, first off, what I've said to a lot of people is, hey, Jaden Daniels, we know he's an incredible runner. But I said Bo Nix, what I call scrambling, ability to buy time behind the line of scrimmage, play backyard football, and make throws. I believe you and Caleb Williams are the best in this draft class at doing that type of stuff. And I hold that in high regard because, again, the NFL, you know, the pockets aren't always clean. There's freaks of nature everywhere coming off the edge. I love this about your game. So let's play this one. This is about Cal stepping up a little bit, feeling the pocket. You have an incredible pocket presence, right? But I'm really impressed with your control and your power throwing the ball on the run, Bo. I mean, is that something that you equally spend as much time on with your quarterback coach, or is that something that just came natural to you?
Well, that comes a little bit more with athleticism and I think, you know, natural ability, but you definitely do have to practice it just to fill it out. And, you know, I think when your body's in sync and in rhythm, it makes these things easier. But this is just a longer developing play in a 5-man protection. So you got to buy some time and you got to be able to, you know, allow the play to get open.
Yeah,
so I feel like sometimes if I sit in the pocket here, it just kills my offensive linemen. You know, they're trying to battle and hold up for a longer period of time. But if I can just buy some time and evade just a little bit, it makes it easier on all of us. And so here, the easier way to evade is to the right. And so that in comes just a high rush and there's no, you know, next level defender. The nose kind of stays in his gap. And so obviously you can, you know, out leverage him pretty fast. And so this, you don't necessarily have to leave the pocket. And if it's a perfect, you know,
clean
pocket, no high rushers, you know, they're not really rushing hard, then you can stay there and be clean. But, you know, with a good defensive rush and defenses that are just going to, you know, get after the quarterback and, you know, have high motors, you got to be able to find time. And in this case, it was just a quick little flush to the right and, you know, letting Tez get over there across the field.
Hey, incredible throw. It's an incredible throw. And this is the kind of, and I probably didn't illustrate this enough. This is the point I was trying to make on the throw with Stanford, right? Against Stanford. I love your ability to know, wait, you know, this isn't perfect, but I know this guy's going to come open against this coverage. and you might not get a chance to throw a 20-yard crossing route every play, or somebody be open for a 50-yard post. You know, so what I was trying to illustrate is you have a great feel of what should be open against this coverage. And I love that. Hey, listen, there's other quarterbacks in this draft class that I'd go, they wouldn't do what you do here. They wouldn't step up in the pocket and go, oh, wait, my deep crosser's about to come open. They just go, oh, let me throw to my back and get my check down and I'll get the completion. Right. And that's where I love your game, and that's where I think you maximize, right? So you know right away, because of this coverage and what you got in the play, you're right. You're like, man, my guy's going to come open here. I just got to have the time to do it. And, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's certainly what it feels like, and I see that a lot in your game, and I really love that aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. There's not always, you know, you can't always predetermine, but in this case, it's single high, and we want to run this play for single high.
Yeah.
And they're going to run and carry with man, and so you just literally have to let – you have to let Tez get over there, and once he gets over there, he's going to be open just because his skill set, you got to have confidence in those guys and throw it, you know, while he's open. But, you know, even if the DB's in trail mode here, you know, he's still open. It's a runaway against man. You just got to find a throw, you know, in your toolbox to throw. Maybe he's undercutting and he's, you know, trailing. You got to put a little bit more air. And if he's going over the top, then you can put it flatter. In this case, he's just running open. So you want to put it, you know, right in his face. So there's just a different, you know, it's a different concept and it's a different, you know, strategy, but you know, it works, you know, most of the time.
Incredible. It's an incredible throw. It's a big-time NFL type of throw right there. All right, so there's the next one I want to get to is it's Mahomes-ish, this one right here. And this is, to me, this is the thing, again, where I say it all the time. This is a big part of life in the NFL right now. You know, there's a reason Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, and Mahomes are awesome. It's because when nothing is there, they still make something happen and get positive plays out of it. I see you do that a lot. One, all right, let's watch the play, and let's just you wax poetically about it, because I think this is one of the better plays in college football this year. This is incredible. Scramble, throw, everything about it I absolutely loved.
So we run the mesh concept here, and they do a great job in four match of just matching patterns here. And so you go through your progression, the rail, the under, the OTB, back to the over the top mesh, and they do a good job of passing it all off. So, you know, it's a early down and you're going tempo in the red zone. You don't want to just force something. And then the pocket is coming from, you know, inside. It's a good rush inside. So they give you the lane to move outside, and then you're just going, you know, scramble to a throwaway here. So in this case, you try to buy time. And if there's nobody inside, you're just going to throw it away, you know, naturally. But, you know, Pat does a great job from going from his, you know, under mesh back over across. And then people think I'm throwing it to Troy back there, but I was throwing it to Pat right there in the front. And Troy happens to be wide open in the back of the end zone there. So I had two great options there. So if I did, you know, miss Pat, I knew Troy was back there in the back. But he makes a great catch because, you know, he could have taken a hit right there, but he just went up there and caught it. And, you know, that was a big touchdown for us at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, big touchdown. He threw a laser here, too. That was a good catch. And I never thought you were throwing to the guy behind him. So I'll verify that. But what goes through your mind in those moments, right? Like, I've talked to Mahomes about these type of moments, and he actually somewhat jokingly serious is like, he basically said, I go into panic mode. It's like panic mode, like, oh, no, I don't know what I'm going to do, and I just react, right? Take us inside of Bo Nix's brain in these moments and kind of how you dissect it or make the game slower in such a chaotic moment.
Well, to me, you got to – it is a little bit of a panic mode, and there's no rules anymore besides don't throw the ball. Don't, you know, turn the ball over.
Yeah,
so
right,
you have to
right.
be smart with whatever decision you make. But at the same time, it there's no structure to it. So it becomes full, you know,
backyard reaction football mode. Right. Yeah.
Full reaction. And you just got to, you know, instinctually find the guy that's open and then throw it away. And you kind of have to slow it down in your head and in your mind as you're doing it, because people are chasing you. People are getting open. The pattern structure is different now. So you just literally got to find where people are, your vision. And I think it turns into a little bit more basketball, like fast break. And you don't necessarily know what the defense is doing either, but you know they're a little bit out of sorts because they're trying to find guys too, and then the D line's still chasing you down, but they're going to get tired eventually, and they don't like chasing over and over and over.
Right.
So you just kind of have to mess around, and it's a little bit of an art that I've, you know, had to get better with, and you don't necessarily, you know, it doesn't click at the beginning, and that's why Patrick is so great at it, because he's just, you know, instinctually, he never makes bad plays, and he always just turns these into incredible plays, and we're talking about him the next day. But that's just what you got to do. You got to keep the play alive and hold it as long as you can sometimes. But the most important thing is, at the end of the day, if you throw it away, it's not,
it didn't hurt.
Just like throwing an incompletion. So
that's right.
Don't make a bad play worse. And I've learned that, you know, through doing it. You know, you learn that through practice. You try some things and, you know, you get in trouble for it, and you're like, okay, I can't do that. So that's, you got to take that out. And then you find the things that do work, and, you know, you go from there.
I like your little analogy there. It's basketball fast break. That's a good way to put it. That really is. I love that aspect of your game. I'm not going to say you're Patrick Mahomes yet, but there's some Mahomes-ish type of stuff right there. I like that a lot. All right, so I know you got some visits coming up. You know I'm a big fan of yours. I've been one for a long time here going, man, Sean Payton's going to watch Bo Nix's film and go, damn, this looks a lot like Drew Brees. But I know you told me before we came on, you do have a few visits planned. What are they, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, yeah, I won't get into the specifics, but I do have, you know, three visits coming up. Excited for those. I've had some great visits, you know, in the past couple of weeks with some privates and some meetings, and you know, so things are going very smoothly, and things are, I guess at the end when things are starting to heat up, you know, this is when the time you want to be meeting with teams, and so I'm excited about those. And you can probably put together, you know, most of them, because, you know, the teams that don't need a quarterback versus the teams that are looking, you know, for them in the draft. But I'm excited for those. And overall, it's been a great draft process. Very unique time. One that I am eager for it to be done and be on a team. But at the same time, I don't want to, you know, skip this part of the process and, you know, wish it away. So excited about where we're at, and you know, I'm going to be ready for wherever that is and wherever, you know, the draft takes me.
Yeah, well, we're excited, Bo. We really are. I appreciate you taking all this time for me. I mean, I really do. I know I probably kept you here longer than you would have liked. You got other things to do, you know, but yeah, enjoy that process. It only comes around once. I was anxious too at one point. But damn, I'd do anything to go back and do it again. So that's one to tell you right there. Have fun with it, man. Kick some butt. I really appreciate you to come on. Best of luck with your next part of your journey, man. Good luck, Bo.
Hey, I appreciate it a lot. Thanks for having me on today.
No problem, Bo. Be good, buddy. Good luck. I'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.
Say, man.
Sounds good.
Good.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.